Excuse me.
Thank you.
Manu up there.
Oh, yeah,
there's a church up there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there is
So, hello again. So, shadowed spaces. What are the shadowed spaces? Well, we're in one. The shadowed spaces are a whole other story, but they were, of course, something of extreme interest to people like Guy Debord, and ultimately of great interest to people like Kevin Lynch as well, for just the opposite reason. For Guy Debord, what I call the shadowed spaces, which have a slightly different connotation from the sorts of spaces that Debord was particularly interested in, they were about everything that the normative planning world that was destroying his Paris was not about. And they were, in a kind of flagrant way, about desire and about passion. In a complicated way, but in a very flagrant kind of a way. My interest in the shadowed spaces arises as a geographer, physical geographer. The story is actually, I think, in that little brochure that you've got. I was doing an investigation of surface water in Worcester, Massachusetts, scrambling over fences to get to the water, looking at the water, and discovering in places where there should have been no human occupation of any kind, well, discovering, among other things, underpants, which was sort of what got me pushed into this search. What were all these pairs of underpants doing in places like this? And of course, places like this, it's more than underpants. In fact, I don't think in a place like this you'll find many underpants. One of the corollaries is when you find signs of wine drinking in a shadowed space, you're not going to find any underpants. That's just a systematic observation that's proven true over time, hundreds and hundreds of shadowed spaces. And this is very clearly a space that's used for a variety of purposes, but I actually did find a pair of pants, but jeans. You may walk over them. They were here yesterday. I don't know if they're still here today. What were these spaces all about? Where were they? What were they used for? How did they come into being? And how did they fit into this the psychogeographic matrix? Clearly, from Debord's perspective, these are not people on a drift who find these. These are people on a quest. And the quest is to find the kind of spaces Debord is interested in that are not the spaces that he hates. I don't know. Maybe there are cameras here. I don't see any. I don't know if you noticed the cameras in the site where we started. They were all over the place, and they were all kinds of cameras, and they were attached to all kinds of structures. Each one of those buildings had its own set of cameras on the space, and there were cameras on the bridge as well. Who knows if anybody was watching them, but good Lord, there were eyes on those spaces. Are you pointing to a camera? Oh, I thought I saw you. Okay. I thought somebody was pointing to a camera back there. No, these spaces are obviously spaces that lack precisely those kinds of things. And they lack them, and it's the lack of those that draws the people here to carry out the kinds of human behaviors that they feel are necessary. One of the things I've always been stressing about the shadow spaces is that when we're talking about these spaces, we're not just talking about spaces that make room for behavior that might be regarded as criminal, certainly regardable as non-normative. It's spaces in which activities take place which you don't believe will stand the light of day, the eyeballing of the normative eye. And those clearly encompass not merely the kinds of things that go on here, but the kind of things that go on in the privacy of your bed, and the kind of things that went on in the early revolutionary fomentations of almost any revolution you care to think about, and that characterized the early behavior of most radical art movements. And you can't stop numbering these things. They take place where people can't see what they're doing. Sometimes they never come out into the light of day. And sometimes they come out in the light of day in a big way, and they change things for people. So these spaces that I'm particularly interested in here are spaces that enable the performance of activities which are essential for us in a wide variety of ways. These perhaps focus those interests in a peculiarly tight way, but nonetheless, these are very, very real things. Clearly, Tomio, for example, a saxophone player, he can't perform that in the most ordinary kind of spaces. It just draws way too much attention. This program, we got clapping tonight, but in Aberdeen we got an onion and a potato and, you know, these spaces call to people like Tomio. They call to people like Sean Meehan, one of the drummers. And in these spaces they really feel capable of doing what it is that they do. So I'm trying to think about these musicians as examples of humans being used to tell us about spaces. And I guess this is where I think psychogeography in the model described by Debord and the model described by Kevin Lynch can ultimately go. That is, we all can become the kinds of instruments that are going to be useful and valuable in understanding and learning about the spaces that we occupy. We let ourselves pay attention and feel what we feel. We can actually learn an awful lot about our world. And with that, let's listen to another instrument responding to our environment.
Hi. Is there anything in there?
It's just a railway track, but I was okay. Wanting to see if it was on.
Okay, I'm just following people.
ちに待ちたる決戦ぞ。今こそ敵をもふらん奮い立ちたる若さぞ。この一戦に勝たざれば諸国の行く手いたならん敵滅せよの命運。神風特別講座